is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We've got another packed show for you today coming up at the top of the hour at 3 o'clock. Ryan Roland Smith will join us, talk some Mariner baseball as they continue to roll, Dave. Another win for the Mariners. We'll talk about that. It is Wednesday, so Washington Wednesday is taking place at 3:30. Mike Varell will join us, talk some Washington Huskies. We got the professor at 4 o'clock. Part two of our conversation with Mike Blowers at 4:30, and then our player spotlight today features DJ Reed. So we'll talk to him, ask him about taunting, hurting feelings, things like
that. Coolest voice on the team.
Coolest voice?
He's got the coolest voice.
There was one guy we had talked to, who was it? Had a really deep voice, super deep. Just
Freddie Swine's pretty good.
I don't think he's on the team anymore. This was a couple years ago, and like
as soon as he
talked, you were like, whoa.
We had the Barry White voice.
Man, who was that? I'll think of it. It made me feel like I had a voice like Mickey Mouse. It's
like, yeah, he was good. But yeah, I love DJ Reed, man. He's a great kid. I love the way he plays. Yeah, so tune in for that. And yeah, he actually opens up a little bit about the taunting penalty and how he feels about it. But yeah,
I'm going to guess not good.
Not good.
Not happy with how things are being called. My hope with that is, and we'll get into some other things about the defense, I hope it's like any other rule change or you know, there's strong emphasis at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Hey, we got to crack down on this, whatever the new rule is. We got to really pay attention to this. Got to be diligent about this. And hopefully as the weeks go on and the games go on, they'll lighten up a bit and go, okay, now we have a clear line here.
Yeah.
This doesn't really violate it. Yeah, you're getting close, but we're not going to throw a flag. And I would assume, and maybe that's making an ass of you and me, Dave, that
you know how I say that all the time? I say it makes an ass out of you and who else, Bob?
Me. There you go.
That way you get both of them.
It's very clever. But hopefully they would, you know, I'm hoping like 3 weeks from now, they'll look at what they called on DJ Reed and go, yeah, probably that wasn't worthy of a flag.
Well, aren't they? First of all, it's just soft because, you know, just from the very basic, what were we taught? Sticks and stones.
Yeah.
Words will never hurt us. I mean, come on. It's just words. The other thing, the panic in their voice when they're saying, we don't want a big brawl or some out-of-control fight. What are you talking about?
Never happens.
When was there a huge out-of-control brawl? We don't even see it in baseball anymore, really.
It's always very chest-puffed up, hold me back.
Yeah.
Nobody throws punches. Certainly nobody lands punches. It just doesn't happen.
Or you just punch the guy in the face mask, and you're like, oh, that hurt.
There's more violence on the snap than there is in a fight.
Exactly. You're exactly right.
You're going to get hurt much worse when the play is going versus, you know, the smack talk back and forth and somebody slaps you in the helmet.
Right. Well, and here's the other thing, too. The NFL is trying to preach this individuality. You know, if these guys want to express themselves, you want to, you know, do this and do that and, you know, wear your cleats and, you know, do all of your expression and everything, and now you're taking this away. And this is, you know, and what you'll hear from DJ, and a lot of them are like, hey, I play with emotion, you know? And I guess I don't remember if I ever, like, stood over somebody and flexed and, you know, or whatever. The only time I ever would think to do that is if they did something to me.
Yeah.
You know, and then I get them back. And then, you know, how do you like it or whatever? But it's just, yeah, it flies in the face. I wonder if the NFLPA will come in and kind of fix it. Now, this isn't our biggest problem, right? But it's very, very, we wish it was.
This would be easy to rectify.
Because this is, you know, we're going into a place where I was going back and looking at the games, Bob. I mean, it's one thing to read about it, but then when you go and look and watch the game, like the Vikings were driving on the Cincinnati Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
They were about just past mid-stripe, and there was about 2 minutes left in overtime in that game. Now, there's lots of things they could have done to not go to overtime, but still, the fumble was very – and I'm watching on my computer – it was very questionable as to whether Dalvin Cook, that ball came out of his hands or not. So Cincinnati gets it back, drives down the field. They find a tight end wide open down the field, hit him, kick a field goal, win the game. And then, you know, you go to the call by the play-by-play guy who thought it was good, and it's not good. So
that's
going to
be the worst nightmare of a play-by-play guy.
Yeah, yeah. I was just talking to Rabel about that. I'm like, don't you do that, mister.
Yeah, you just hold your horses, make sure it goes through the uprights.
Yeah.
Well, what about this defense, though? We talked about this, and we sort of debated, you know, the blame, you know, slicing up the blame pie, who gets the biggest slice. I gave it to the defense. Everybody's complicit, Dave. First of all, and this is sort of in response to the text we got. We brought up a text, and you guys can text in 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line. Somebody saying, hey, Bob, where's all – because I said something along the lines of, hey, you look at the roster, there's a lot of talent on that side of the ball. Right. Somebody was countering it saying, well, what, really? Or something along those lines. I'm like, well, come on, Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, Bobby Wagner. We can go up and down Dunlap, all these guys, and then – that person, guy or girl, had a, well, this guy's overpaid, he's not that good, this person's getting old, this guy's old. Do we overestimate the talent on this roster, on that side of the ball, in your opinion? Are we too close to it and we think everybody's a superhero and nationally they're not? I mean, you could look at it and say, well, you know, maybe there was a reason the Lions didn't want Quandre Diggs, although he's been fantastic, in my opinion, since he's been here. And you know, the Bengals had no use for Carlos Dunlap, but we think he's a star here. And, you know, DJ Reed was a cast off from the 49ers. They didn't want him, but we think he's great here. Are we overestimating him because they're wearing Seahawks colors?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's worth looking at. Okay. So, you know, I'm just looking at if you're a national guy, you know, let's say you're in Cincinnati or some other NFL town. I'm looking at the starting defense. So it's Benson Mayoa, Kerry Hyder, Puna Ford, Al Woods, and Rasheem Green.
Right.
Who are they? I mean, we know Rasheem Green was awesome in the preseason, just fantastic. We know how good Al Woods can be. We think Puna Ford, you know, this and that. You could go on and on and on, but, you know, are those guys starters on other teams?
I think it's a fair question. I don't know. I guess it depends on the team we're talking about, but are any of those guys Pro Bowlers?
Yeah.
No.
No.
They might, maybe Rasheem Green works himself into that, somebody achieves it, but do you look at them and go, well, there's a Pro Bowl caliber defensive lineman?
Yeah.
No, they're solid. You look at them and go, these are solid, just fundamentally sound guys who do the right things, and you talk about that with Green, and he's almost mechanical in that he's always doing the right thing. But are they extra meeting guys? No. If you're being honest, no, they're not.
No, not really on their defensive line. You know, maybe you could say Dunlap, but, he didn't even start, and he plays kind of in and out. But it was a great question you asked last night, and I just started thinking about it. Like, Bobby Wagner, I mean, look, he's probably in most NFL towns, he's your starter. I mean, right. He's a Pro Bowler, all that. And if you look at Jordan Brooks, like, we know about Jordan Brooks because he had a very promising rookie year. But, you know, if around the league, you're probably not. Really, the safeties, you know, I feel like any town.
They should start in any, yeah.
Yeah. Any town. I mean, look, you're going to play Harrison Smith this week. He's a really good safety, but, you know, I just don't think Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, they both made the Pro Bowl. I don't think there's any question about those two guys.
I think there are three guys on the defense where you would say, regardless of the town they're in, they're starters.
Mm-hmm.
It's the two safeties, Adams and Diggs, and Bobby Wagner.
Yeah.
Anybody else, I think you can make a case like, yeah, they're a starter here. Maybe not. You know, Brooks hasn't developed yet into that guy. Maybe if
I feel like they have adequate talent. I don't feel like that they've gotten beat necessarily just because they're not good enough. Now, you could say that, and I know people will argue about with Trey Flowers and maybe DJ Reed a little bit. They'll argue with that. But, you know, how much of it is, again, a couple of the passes that were caught in front of Trey Flowers, including the 19-yarder that was down near the goal line. I mean, that was on your linebackers dropping back. They got to get underneath that. And the only reason I say that is because two plays later, they do drop right, and the pass does not get thrown. And Tannehill's looking for it. He's looking for it. It's not there because the linebacker dropped into coverage. So, yeah, I mean, that's for sure on the linebackers. But there's some times where you're like, okay, where should Trey be on this? Where should DJ Reed be on this? Why are they allowing these receptions? I mean, that was a pretty good group that they had there.
Yeah.
I mean, A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, but, I mean.
Even though Brown didn't have a good day overall.
No, he dropped like three or four passes. I know he had 9 targets.
I saw a quote from him. I don't know if it was from Twitter or he was doing an interview where he said his family was taking shots at him saying, man, you couldn't even catch COVID.
Jeez. Yeah, and I even was like, his family was coming out.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I can't remember. I don't know if he tweeted that. I just saw it in a story where he was you know, having fun at his own expense about how he just was not having a good day catching the ball.
Did you think on that one that maybe he felt the footsteps of Quandre Diggs?
Where alligator arms?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quandre, I mean, he put a couple of good hits in Indianapolis on some of the receivers there.
Yeah, and the one that DJ Reed got called for the penalty, that wasn't a great play by him. I mean, you know, he was beat, if we're being honest. He was beat, and it would have been a good catch by Brown. He was had to dive out for it. He was stretched out for it, bounced off his hands. I mean, it was there. Every receiver tells you, if it hits my hands, I got to catch the ball.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he felt like he should have caught that, but it just wasn't a great day for him. But just getting back to the defense, you know, we were very quick in the past to point to you know, the offensive coordinator. Shoddy's not getting it done. Bevel's not getting it done. They don't know what they're doing. They don't and on the defense, it's not quite as much. It's Pete's defense. It's Pete's defense. So if we function under that idea that it doesn't really matter whether it's Dan Quinn or Gus Bradley or Ken Norton, it's Pete's defense. A, is Ken just not as good at running that defense? B, does he not have the horses? We just kind of went through the roster. Or C, is it not really Pete's defense? These guys do have more control than maybe we're giving them credit for. And maybe Ken's not a great defensive coordinator.
Yeah, it's somewhere in there or a mixture of all three.
Yeah, trying to find what the answer is. Because, A, I the most important part of that for me, and you tell me if you disagree, I don't know if it is Pete's defense. Is it because the way it's portrayed is Pete saying, here's what I want to see. Here's how I want the defense to run. You just make it happen. Well, then this person doesn't have autonomy. It's hard to fault the coordinator if he's doing, well, I'm just doing what he's telling me to do. This is the way we're running it because that's the way he wants it run. And if that's the case, is it time for Pete to relinquish that part of it and say, all right, I need to bring somebody in who's got a vision. Maybe it's different than mine, but I trust their vision and give them some level of autonomy and let them do what they need to do defensively. Because you look at the trend and you went through and put together some numbers here that aren't very flattering.
Yeah, well, and it was just basically following Ken Norton. And so half of these numbers are, you know, in Oakland. Or, well, yeah, they were Oakland when he was there. And then, you know, half are here. And really, you go back to and the whole thing you were talking about with Pete Carroll. And remember the keeper of Pete's defense used to be Rocky Seato?
Yeah.
Like he had, like, this big book that had, you know, all of his notes and thoughts on how he's developed his defense over the years. You know, and I used to say, well, I think it's maybe the safeties because the safeties were so good with Cam and Earl.
Right.
But now they have those back. And, you know, it's been a couple of years with those guys. But, you know, if you look at the numbers over the last couple of years, I mean, look, these are, you know, total yards. Last year they were number 22. In passing yards, they were number 31. They gave up 285 yards. And then they were good against the run last year. They were number five. But if you go and look at, you know, just Ken Norton's defense as a defensive coordinator, you look at the total yards there, he averages 22nd, the ranking in the NFL.
So that's number from 22. 2015 through 2020, just his defense is how they've ranked.
Exactly. Yeah, didn't include this year, but, you know, he's 3 years with the Raiders, 3 years with the Seahawks, and his average rank is 22nd. So, you know, 22nd best, 367 yards per game. And then you go and look at the pass yards, and that's where it gets pretty bad because it was, like I said, they were number 31 last year. They gave up 285 yards. And remember, they were on a pace to give up more yards than the 13 and 14 defense combined. So, yeah, and it was going to be an NFL record. So ranked 31st. And just in general, you know, pass yards over the 6 years for Ken, 24th. Much better against the run, ranked 14th on average, and including last year being, you know, number five, as I mentioned. But in 2017, he was number 12, actually. I was thinking that was a two, but no, I mean, it's, you know, it's...
You got excited for a minute.
I did, but I wrote it down with the little hash mark, Bob, and, you know, had my printing there, and it's off. But, yeah, it was number 12, not number two. So he's averaged 14th in as far as rushing yards go. And then, you know, you look at the takeaways, been pretty good. I mean, 2019, they were great.
Right.
32. Last year, they took the ball away 22 times. They've taken it away twice so far this year. But, and when he was in Oakland one time, you know, they were number two, you know, so he's been great at takeaways. And so he's ranked 12th in his 6 years. And this is just a ranking of, you know, first through 32nd. And then opponent third down percentage, 16th. So, I mean, basically around middle of the road. I mean, I averaged all these numbers out. It's about 17th, you know, just past the halfway point. That's kind of where, as far as yardage and all those things go. Sacks, I couldn't get a number on that. But, you know, sacks have been pretty much around 40 since Pete Carroll has gotten here.
Except for the 1 year with 28.
Yeah, the 28. But last year they had 48. So, I mean, that kind of made up for it. And, you know, somewhere in between, almost anyway. So, yeah, he's been right around 39, 40, 41 sacks. And, you know, those are big plays. Those are big plays. But mainly it's been the takeaways. And, you know, the 1 year in 2019, I thought, hey, look, it's fine that they were giving up lots of yards because they were taking the ball away like crazy. But, yeah, they didn't get that last year. You know, they only had 22 takeaways, 10 less than the year before.
So, in summation, these numbers tell you bottom half in just about every single category.
Yeah.
Bottom half with the exception of the two categories where he was 14th and 12th.
Right.
So, not great in any category. Pretty bad in some. In middle of the road to a little lower than middle of the road most. It's not a flattering picture of what he's produced, you know, in his time as a defensive coordinator. And this isn't meant just to pile on Ken Norton. He's all the problem. Like I said, if this is Pete's defense, which I don't really have clarity on how much that is literal, like this is the game plan, you just follow it. If that's the case, it's hard to get mad at anybody who's the coordinator. It should be Pete.
Yeah. Well, and I just put together the numbers.
Yeah.
Because, you know, look, I just went and read them. So I don't think that that's necessarily it, that it's Ken Norton's fault and that it's terrible and, you know, he needs to make a change and all that. Because, again, yeah, if Pete has control of the defense, I'm just assuming, unless he's paying more attention to the offense these days. But, again, I remember just that was the big thing about, you know, with Rocky Seato being the guy that just kept Pete's defense and it would, you know, change from year to year and they would have notes about what worked and what didn't and how things went and everything. And, you know, I'm just not sure where that's at. But you know, then you could look at the other side of what you brought up, Bob. I mean, here are the numbers with Ken Norton, but are we, like you said, are we just kind of being homers? Because if you look across the D-line, I think that they were great in week one. I love what they did in the preseason, and I feel like we got a good D-line here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like you said, if you're from Cincinnati, Houston, wherever, and you're looking at these guys, do you recognize Kerry Hyder and Puna Ford?
Probably not.
Maybe not.
Probably not. Matt Hasselbeck, who's on every week with Mike Salk, had some thoughts on the defense and what, in his opinion, what he thinks Pete wants to see out of the defense.
He would sort of trick the defense. Like, we'd be in a team meeting, and he'd say, what kind of defense are we going to be? Are we going to be the hardest hitting, nastiest, most physical defense? What do you say, Lofa Tutupu? And he'd be like, yes, coach. He'd be like, nah, I don't care about that. I don't care about that. I want the football. I want the football back. Marcus Trufant, you know, are we going to be intimidating? Are people going to be afraid to come across the middle when they come to us? Yeah, coach. No, I don't care about that. I want the football. It's all about the football. I don't care about that. And so when you see these, like, I think it was three unnecessary roughness penalties mm-hmm. and then a taunting penalty, it's just like a lack of – it's like maybe this is how it was on your old team, but, like, that's not Seahawk football. That's not Seahawk defense. We want the ball.
It's funny. Greg Robinson, who – was kind of a cohort of Pete's. They were, mm-hmm. you know, they had coached together. I think it was with the Jets. Greg Robinson was my defensive coordinator in Denver my last year. And he came in and, you know, he had everybody sitting around. And, you know, it was like Steve Atwater and, you know, all of our good players. They brought in Michael James Dean. Yeah, we had some pretty good players. And he's like, what's the point of defense? And he points to me. You know, the first one I go, get the offense off the field. No, wrong. And then it's like points to Atwater. What's the point of defense? And Steve's like, get the ball. I'm like, see, now that's why he's a Hall of Famer and I'm not. But, you know, he was in that same line of thinking, like, that's, you know, and I wish that I had had more of a concentration on that, because it used to just be about, hey, we got to stop. We got to get a stop. We got to get off the field. It is about the ball, man. And the times that I had tackles secured, that I didn't strip the ball out, it just wasn't a point of emphasis, you know? You know, remember the defensive coordinator for the Cougs? I think his name was A.J. Finch or Hinch.
Hinch,
yeah. He was like, the ball doesn't know who it belongs to. That ball goes up in the air. It's not necessarily the offense. Yeah, it's not theirs. It's a mentality. And so, yeah, that's funny to hear Matt talk about that, because that's the same thing that Greg Robinson, you know, would do. And then he had this stupid beaver thing where he had the little hand puppet on the sidelines. I don't know if I've told you about that. But we would have, like, money we would put into a pot, and it was called the beaver pot. And the reason why the beaver is because the beaver is the hardest working animal in the animal kingdom, according to Greg Robinson.
Okay.
So we would all put, like, $50 in a pot, and whoever got the first turnover of the game would get it. And so, you know, and one time I got it, and he pulls out a hand puppet on the sidelines that has a little, it's a little beaver.
You're like, coach, put it away, please. Yeah, people are looking.
He shoves it up in my face mask. I'm like, get that stupid thing off me.
God.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it was the same line of thinking that it is about getting the ball. And so, you know, again, go back to 2019. It was okay that they were bleeding yardage, because they were, man. It was bad in 2019. I mean, they were giving up, you know, 381 yards a game. You know, they were 26th in the league, but they had 32 takeaways, and that's really what defense is about.
All right, let's take two.
Well, I wish I was surprised to learn that about the worst head coach in Syracuse football history, but I am not.
Is Greg Robinson? That's right. Greg Robinson was the head coach at Syracuse.
When I was there.
He was a nice guy, man.
Saw a two-win season, a one-win season.
When him and Pete were together in a room, I was like, I remember one time in Japan, because we played over there, and Pete Carroll was there with the Niners, and they were standing together, and I went up to Greg, who I knew, and then Pete was standing there. It was at a party, and I looked at him, and I go, hey, guys, nice hair, because they both had, like, the big gray, and Pete looked at me like, who in the world are you? And some other word that I can't say, but anyway, yeah. Greg Robinson, that's your boy
right
there.
Yeah, had to get that in there. So, yeah, Andy Dalton out with a knee injury, and it's officially Justin Fields' time. He'll make his first career start on Sunday in Cleveland against the Browns.
It'll be interesting to see, A, how he does, B, when Dalton is healthy, and much of it will be depending on, A, how is Justin Fields playing. If he's scuffling at all, do they throw Dalton back in there the next week or whenever he's healthy? Because he said, if he's healthy, he's our starter, talking about Dalton.
This will be the greatest upset in Chicago Bears history if Justin Fields becomes like this awesome franchise quarterback, because
that they've never had.
They've never had one, and Ohio State has never produced one.
Yeah.
Have they?
Not one that I can remember. We went down the list.
Art Schliester.
Yeah, they've had great college quarterbacks, plenty of them, but translating to the NFL, no.
Kraken training camp begins tomorrow, and the first preseason game is Sunday night, 6 o'clock against the Canucks. And this is pretty cool to get some exposure. King 5 announced that they'll televise 4 preseason games beginning Tuesday night in Edmonton. That'll be shown on Kong.
Nice.
Sweet.
Fired up for the Kraken. How many preseason games do they have, Lefko?
They have 6 preseason games. Only 4 are going to be televised, though, locally.
So, you know what I'm going to do for hockey? You know how I get really annoyed by all these people that try to sound like fancy smarty pants?
You know, start throwing out hockey terms.
Single high safety and all that. I'm going to get all these, like, super in-depth, and I'm just going to start throwing them out there.
He's just going to start throwing that second line. I don't know. The shift I thought was problematic. You're just throw out buzzwords.
Yeah. Make up little abbreviations.
That'd be great. You're going to upset every true hockey fan out there. Like, what is he talking about?
Let's see.
It doesn't even make sense.
I'm going to put it to the test. Just see how annoyed you are when I do that. And that's how annoyed I get when people try to be, you know, Mr. Football Expert.
All right. Take two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberKnifeProstate. Coming up, there is a guy out there who could fix the Seahawks secondary, but is he worth the risk? We'll tell you who we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk some Mariner baseball with Ryan Roland Smith. Always fun to catch up with our favorite Bogan.
I called it, Bob. You asked me at the end of the show. I know I had a 50-50 shot, but
for the Mariners are going to win.
Mariners are going to win, baby.
They won.
That was a fun game to watch. I really enjoyed that one.
Oh, man. just, I can't believe there are 11 games left.
What if they win tonight?
It'll be awesome.
That'll be awesome.
Be so awesome. Remember when they won? That was cool.
What would you do if they won tonight, Bob?
I'd be happy.
Okay.
I'd be excited. I'd
tear off your clothes and go streaking.
I'd be tweeting about it as I am wont to do during these games. We'll get into it, but J.P. Crawford was special last night.
Yeah.
We'll get into that later, but, man, he was a lot of fun to watch. So we talked about, and you guys can text in 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line throughout the show. Somebody had a very creative response to the beaver puppet, which we can't read on the air, but it was very, very funny. Just want to let that listener know. Well done.
Yeah, that was well done.
Well done. And then somebody else said, the 253 said, Dave Wyman talking about hockey is like listening to Stephen A. Smith talk about the UFC.
Yeah.
No.
You're impressed with his boxing abilities.
Oh, yeah.
He can throw a punch, Stephen A., right?
Oh, boy, is he good. He's good. Yeah, no, he takes nails to the chalkboard to a new level. When they put him on the UFC broadcast, it is beyond disastrous and painful.
And especially since you've seen him spar.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I just hope he never gets into a dust-up in public. It's not going to go well for him. That's all I can say after seeing the film. But we brought up the idea of there's a guy out there that could fix the secondary. We're in that weird phase with these cornerbacks where you're just like, man, Trey Flowers, people either are saying, man, he's not as bad as everybody thinks, or he's terrible, get him off the field. DJ Reed, can he stay healthy? Can he be out there? You just don't feel great about that particular position group. Richard Sherman is out there. We talked about this with the professor, that the Buccaneers have reached out to him. They've had a level of interest. He said the 49ers are considering maybe bringing him back as well. Pete was asked about him, said, no, we haven't had any conversations. But even if Pete said, yeah, we're kicking the tires, we're looking at it, is he a cure for what may be ailing them? And it's hard to say after two games. I'm not going to say they're terrible right now, but in his current, physically where he's at, his age, him coming off that Achilles, is he in a position to where you would go, well, he automatically makes that position group better? I think mentally, his mind, he's incredibly, you brought it up. I mean, he's incredibly smart in terms of his just intellect in general, but his football IQ is off the charts. He could teach a lot. He could show a lot of things. There's a value to his presence in that way, but would he be worth it? Would he be worth the potential attitude, the presence he brings, which, if we're being honest again, when he left, was not good.
Yeah, and don't you feel like the relationship between Pete and him is pretty much over? I feel like it'll be restored. You know, I always say this, like Brett Favre, when he left Green Bay, everybody hated him. You know, 5 years after he retires, he goes walking around with Bart Starr, and everybody just, oh, you know, Brett Favre, the greatest Packer of all time. But they hated him when he played for Minnesota. He went to the Jets first, I think. But that'll be the case. That'll be the case because you're right, Richard Sherman did not leave on a good note. And, you know, there was a few times where he had criticism of Pete. Pete's kind of a tough guy when it comes to that, though. I remember when, you know, he was saying the kumbaya thing.
Yeah.
And Pete was like, his response was like, I know that dude better than anybody knows him. Okay, so Richard, you know, and I don't know if he said we'll be all right or whatever. So, but I just feel like that ship has sailed. But you're right. If you were able to bring him in an advisory role just to help communicate with the corners, I feel like it would make him better. I feel like he's really, his understanding of the game. And like I said yesterday, you've seen some videos where he's like coaching up these kids. And, you know, the kid's like, no, you didn't do it right. Do this. And then, you know, he's like, did you feel that? And the kid's like, yes. You know, like, wow, what a great, you know, coaching point. And, you know, so if you could get him back in that capacity
as a coach,
yeah, I mean, I don't know, would you have like an advisory role or whatever? They do that with GMs all the time.
Yeah,
you know, where they bring them in, they're just advisors, they're kind of part-time whatever, you know. But it's like Deshaun Shedd, you know, you see him over there because he made the transition from safety to corner,
right?
You see him talking to Trey Flowers about that kind of stuff. And, you know, so yeah, maybe in that regard. But
would his ego allow him to do that? I think he thinks he's still a player and he can still play. And I'm sure he can play to an extent. He's not who he was. He wouldn't, even if just playing the hypothetical, the Seahawks bring him back. Hey, Richard, welcome back. Number 25, we love you. He's not the same player.
No.
He's not that guy anymore.
Yeah, and do you think he's, I mean, I don't know what kind of shape he's in. But one of the things about him was that he was a very physical tackler. I mean, 55, 65, 57, 58.
Loved
those
that part
tackles.
Of his game. Loved
yeah.
it.
And he had 61 tackles two seasons ago, and he's a Pro Bowler. 2019, the guy had three interceptions. So it's not that far removed from that. But, yeah, I love that part, too. And that's why I like DJ Reed, who we'll talk to later.
Yeah. But do you think I like the idea that you bring up, that his mind has got so much value to it in right. terms of his football IQ and what he can impart with these younger guys that you know, maybe they're struggling with something. Maybe there's an element of their game he's looking at going, oh, here's how you fix that.
Yeah.
Because it just seems like it's innate. It just comes natural to him. I would love that aspect of him here. But him on the field, him in that locker room, the way it ended just gave me a feeling of, okay, this is the right time. He's one of the greats to play here, and like you said with Favre, he'll be celebrated down the road, but this is a good time. The parting of the ways is coming at the right time. I don't know if a reunion, I don't think this is the right time.
I'll tell you what, though. What about this? You know, Sherm going through some really difficult times, and we had the whole domestic violence thing that, you know, went down, and, you know, he was really in a low spot. You know, maybe he decides to, hey, why don't I go back to the time when I was happiest? You know, from the time when he was the fifth rounder that nobody knew to becoming the star. Remember his rookie year? He went afterwards and was interviewing people at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Hey, you heard of this idiot, Richard Sherman?
Yeah.
You know, and all that stuff. And maybe Pete says, hey, why don't you come here? We'll bring you in and get back to those kinds of days, and maybe you can help us out a little bit.
He was so much fun to talk to. He was my favorite guy to talk to.
He was a really good
Loved
interview.
It.
Remember we had him on the huddle a few times.
Yeah,
and
he was, I mean, he was, like I said, right in the middle of the whole Legion of Boom thing when we had him on, and we were reading him suggestions from our listeners, like, hey, they want to name it this. They want to name it. He's like, no. And then Legion of Boom, he's like, oh, yeah, like that one. You know, he was a fun guy. He was always smiling and laughing, and that changed over time and became callous and, I don't know, seemed sort of bitter on some level, or I don't know. It was just
Remember I asked him a question about third down? And he goes, what's the problem on third down? He's nothing special. He goes, otherwise, if it was that big of a deal, people would do the same thing on first down and second down.
Yeah.
You know, he just always had very logical, good, you know, things to say, very positive, like you said, lots of fun, and something happened.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. But most of you texting in, it seems like the consensus is, yeah, love Sherm. No thanks.
No thanks.
No thanks. So I'm with you on that. All right, coming up, last night the Mariners showed why there will be plenty of excitement over the next few weeks. That's coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, Ryan Roland-Smith will join us, talk some Mariner baseball with him, so stay tuned for that conversation. For the final homestand of the Mariners season, 710 ESPN Seattle is bringing you a chance to score $7.10 Mariners tickets for the game on Monday, September 27th, when the Mariners host the Oakland A's. Just use the promo code 710 to redeem this special offer in the center field bleacher seats. You can get more info at 710sports.com/events. So, man, you don't know what's going to happen. They keep winning. Everything could be on the line during that game, and you're out there for $7.10. Amongst the other Mariner maniacs.
How about that? What if they win tonight, Bob?
I'd be so happy. Hey, they're officially a winning team right now, Dave.
Yes, and
they are officially, if they lose every game the rest of the season, they're still a winning team.
Yeah, and Lefko would be closest, right? Because you had
he
81,
picked 80.
Or 80.
He said 80. Yeah. I'm getting further out of it with every win. I said 76. You said 86.
Why do you hate the Mariners, Bob?
I just hate them, yeah. But looking at this, I mean, they're three games back of the wild card, 11 games to go. You look at the split. They got six at home. They got five on the road. See how it shakes out. I don't know how many wins. You know, you're looking at other teams now. Now you're looking at the Yankees. You're rooting for them to lose every day. You're rooting for the Blue Jays to lose every day. You're going to need some help in there. But what, outside of getting to the playoffs, what do you want to see in these final 11 games? And you guys can text in as well, 710-710. If you're a Mariner fan, What's left for you to see, or do you want to see? I'd like to see a continuation of something that we're seeing, and that is Kelnick having his best month by far. I mean, I think after last night, he's hitting 265 with a 324 on-base percentage in the month of September, and he had his first career triple.
Here's the pitch on the way, swinging a drive into the gap in right center field. That's going to get down for extra bases on the track and off the wall. Kelnick steaming for second. Up with the ball as Marte makes the turn at second, heading for three. The relay by Andrews, thrown to third, and out at third is Kelnick. Down with a tag, Matt Chapman. Holy smokes, a close play at third base. Kelnick trying to get into third with a triple. Scott Service may want to take a look at this one. And he is safe at third base. Jared Kelnick is in there with a leadoff triple.
So I'd like to see that continue. I think it just carrying that into the offseason, letting him end the season on a good note, because it's, if you look at his season in totality, it's not a great season. He's hitting under 200, got sent back down, was hitting under 100 when he got sent back down. He hasn't hit over 200 in any month he's been up except for September. So keep ride this wave. That's what I'd like to see. Just throughout the final 11 games, just continue with what he's been doing, getting on base, squaring the ball up, playing well. I'd love to see Seager go out with a bang, because I don't think he's coming back. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see him I think he will reach. He's one RBI away from a career high. He's got 99. He's done that before, never had 100. He's got a career high in home runs right now. Would love to have seen him get to 40. I don't think he's going to get there in 11 games, but love to see him just go out in a blaze of glory, if you will, before he moves on. And the same for Yusei Kikuchi. I don't dislike him. He's frustrating because he can be so good, and you've seen him dominate. It just hasn't happened often enough. I don't think they're going to pick up that option. I think they'd be crazy if they did. I don't know if he'll exercise his player option. I could see him getting like a 2-year deal from another team, some other team saying, hey, this guy is throwing 97. We can work with him. We can fix whatever's going wrong with him. So I'd be surprised if he were back next year. Maybe he'll exercise it. Maybe he loves it here. But I could see another team coming in and maybe giving him a 2-year deal, something like that.
You asked what you want to. I want to continue to see.
Maybe something you haven't seen that you want to see.
Yeah, for me, it's I don't think you can give enough credit to Manny Acta, Perry Hill, Pete Woodward, Scott Service. Just the awareness of this ball. One of my favorite plays was Bowers scoring from third base.
Heads up, base running.
Exactly. I mean, just the awareness, and that's coaching, man. It's just so, like, he just was ready to go. And that's the thing with baseball. I mean, you know, we talk about 162 games and you got to take them one at a time and everything, but there would be, you know, I don't know. I would be very tempted to, like, kind of drift off into space and maybe look at the crowd and not.
If you were standing on third?
Yeah. I mean, paying attention.
Dave's out there playing with butterflies.
Yeah. I mean, look, that's an exaggeration, obviously, but, I mean, most guys aren't that ready. The second that ball got loose from the first baseman, he was on the way to home, and he had to be because it was very close.
Yeah, it didn't bounce far.
Yeah, and to me, that's what the small little margins, like the relay from Marte to Andrews to Chapman was phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, the throw there, but you saw Kelnick's speed on display, and that's one of the five tools that he has. He has speed. And so just watching him run that and just, I don't know, it's just amazing to me how, and really the tag on Bowers that was late was pretty close. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, so you're dealing with such small margins as far as timing goes. And these guys, time after time, have shown that they just are ready and they're aware and they're, you know, taking advantage of every opportunity. So, yeah, that's what I love seeing. That, you know, I remember talking about the play with the Angels where, remember, I don't know if it was a bunt or something, or maybe, no, there was a pitch that got away from Tom
Murphy,
yeah, and he scoops it and throws it to, I can't remember who the pitcher was, but then he makes the tag at home. I mean, those kinds of plays, just they're always ready to play. You have not seen a lot of errors. You've not seen a lot of, I mean, there's been like a throwing error, but like I'll bet you they have the least number of missed, you know, opportunities this year. The way they have taken advantage of in key moments. So, yeah, I just loved that. I mean, it was just a throw over to first to try to keep the runner at first base. The second that ball got loose, like I said, Bowers is heading for home. So those are the kind of plays that really get me. And I just think, you know, with some of the things with what like Tyler Anderson are doing, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's coaching. I think a lot of it is coaching. They get here, and these guys always have them ready to go and then see something different. So, yeah, I know we're having Moyer on, but I wrote down amazing awareness. on that play.
Yeah, it was a great play.
Amazing.
Heads up, base running. I'd like to see, I don't know how much Cal Raleigh's going to be playing in these final games. I'm not sure what the rotation will be like. I mean, Murphy can't catch every night. I'd love to see him have some success before the end of the season, because that's a guy who looks completely overmatched at the plate in Cal Raleigh. And he obviously can hit. He had, what was it, a 26-game, 27-game, whatever it was, in AAA. I mean, he can hit, but
he's
not
hitting here.
He hit
a monster home run, too.
444 feet.
Yeah.
By the way, Jake Bowers hit one 460. 460! In Kansas City, souped it out there in the fountains.
Yeah. We had a floater.
It was a floater. 460 from Jake Bowers. Like, my goodness. I was looking at the TV.
Well,
going,
it's another guy.
Is that right?
You look at what he was doing in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Nothing special.
Yeah. Anybody who's part of the plan going forward, and again, I don't think, I'd love to see Seager back, for the record. I'd love to see him come back. I just don't think it's going to happen from everything I'm hearing. I don't think it will. I'd love to be wrong about it. And people are texting in, bring him back. He's going to be back. I don't think he is, but I'll be happy to be wrong about that.
Isn't it also a factor of, does he want to be back?
Yes.
So, I mean, that's what everybody thinks. It's just, bring him back because you want him back, but does he want to be back?
All right, coming up, we'll get a pitcher's insight on Marco and Tyler Anderson, what he'd like to see as well in the final 11 games. Ryan Roland-Smith will join us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.